Hello and welcome to Lush Tums, the podcast, supporting you on your mothering journey during pregnancy, birth and beyond. Through yoga, education and community, we enable every woman we work with to connect more deeply to herself and her own innate wisdom. Find your tribe as you become a parent, making positive, informed choices that are right for you, because Lush Tums believes everything has a place. Join the two Claires as we connect, laugh and learn. In this space, everything is welcome. Hi everyone and welcome. Today, Claire and I are joined by Tina Mason. Tina is the head physiotherapist and owner of Brighton Physiotherapy Clinic. She has extensive experience in the treatment of all musculoskeletal disorders and has completed postgraduate training in women's pelvic health, acupuncture, female urinary dysfunction, bladder pain syndrome, menopause management, and advanced CPD in core restore and functional exercise programming. Tina sees women through all stages of life, including antenatal, postnatal, perimenopausal and menopausal women, as well as those suffering from any type of pelvic pain or dysfunction. Tina attended pregnancy and postnatal yoga with Claire in Brighton, and they have continued to stay in touch professionally ever since, sharing a passion for supporting women and education around our bodies. Welcome, Tina, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, ladies. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Tina. Welcome. It's so lovely to see you.
Yeah, it's lovely to see you guys as well.
So we'd love to ask you, Tina, what drew you to become a physiotherapist?
I was really good at science at school. I absolutely loved it. And my mum was a nurse. I was really interested in how the body worked and things like that. And then when I realised that there was such a thing as physiotherapy, I thought, great, I was really into sports. I thought it was all about, you know, looking after rugby players and all of that sort of thing. And then obviously went into my training and realised that it's very, very different. It's very hospital based. And I loved it. I absolutely loved working as a team in a hospital. Worked in London at Royal Free for a long time once I'd qualified, and it was I've just really loved looking after people, caring for people, helping people with their injuries and complaints and things like that. So,
and how did you get to specialize into something so niche, you know, the women's health angle? What kind of drew you to that area of the work?
So I specialized initially into musculoskeletal, and that was whilst I was in the hospitals. Once I'd gone private, I then was lucky enough to work doing ski seasons. So I worked out in the French Alps for a number of years, just as a musculoskeletal physio. Came back to the UK to settle down, had my children, and then had problems myself. So I had issues with my son wanting me to go on the trampoline and me going, I'm never going to go on a trampoline again, thinking, well, I'm a physio, this is ridiculous. What support is there out there and what can I do? And couldn't find much, realised that there was very few women's health physios. I had a good friend from working at the Royal Free, actually, who was a women's health physio, and I spoke to her, and then it piqued my interest, and I just thought, this is something that is really, really important, and there's not enough known about it, there's not enough talked about it. So I wanted to then be able to help other people as well as being able to find out what I needed to do as well.
It's interesting how sometimes our own desire for healing ourselves can lead us into this way of working. So going back to when you were pregnant, how did you find pregnancy? What was it like going to Claire's classes?
Well, my pregnancies were really good, actually. I was really lucky. I know that lots of people love being pregnant, and there are lots of people that hate being pregnant and find it really weird. I was one that found it fascinating. I loved it. I was actually pregnant with my first Charlie in Bristol, and I don't know who it was with, but I did some antenatal yoga down there, and I had him there. But then we moved to Brighton when he was 6 weeks old, And I didn't know anyone or have any mum friends or anything. So I sort of threw myself into parent and baby groups. And I remember that was the first one I came to was a Lush Tums Yoga Mums and Babies, which I'll admit wasn't successful because I had one of those babies that didn't want to be put down ever. So I then managed to progress to the postnatal ones in the evening, which were fabulous. And it was so nice to be able to sort of get some time to yourself and look after yourself a little bit. And then I carried on doing those for a while. And then when I was pregnant with my daughter, I remember coming to the antenatal classes with you again and love those. I've always loved your classes.
Thank you, Tina. That's so lovely to hear that. That just fills my little heart with joy.
But you know what? I wanted to say, actually, that one of the things that I loved about your classes was that they are always a really nice safe space for women. So you've always made it so that everyone, you go around to speak to everyone, find out what's going on in their lives, whether they're exhausted or upset or, you know, even if they've had an argument with their partner or they just feel like they're not coping as a mum or anything like that. And you go through and tailor the sessions to that, which have always been so lovely.
Oh, that is definitely one of the things that I wanted to bring to the offering. So that is great that landed with you so well. That's really touched me. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you.
Quite a unique aspect of Lush Tums classes that we ensure that every person that shows up is seen. Can go through their whole day without anyone actually really connecting with them and really seeing how they are.
Yeah, and it's a really safe space. Always feels like a really safe space, which is lovely.
Also leads to people becoming friends as well, which is one of the other lovely aspects of the class, is that they can be so social. And how did you find giving birth?
My births, I was, again, really, really lucky with my births. I had my son at Southlands Hospital in Bristol, and managed to have him in the pool, which was amazing. I did hypnobirthing beforehand, and the hospital there, they were really good at knowing about the hypnobirthing. The midwives were fantastic. So they left us to it. They turned the lights down and just left us to it, and just checked every now and again. So I was really lucky. I did have a grade 2 tear, which was stitched. And then with my daughter, because of that, we had her in Brighton. I managed to have a home birth with her in the pool, which was really lovely as well. Although it was very different in the fact that the first time round, they really left us to it, which I really liked. And the second time round, because we were in our house and they were talking to us, the midwives were coming in and checking and stuff, every time they came in to check, every time they came to talk to me, my contractions stopped because I felt like I had to look after people at my home and I was playing host. So in the end, I had to tell my husband to tell him to leave us alone, which he was mortified about. And but I was like, you need to go and do that now. And he's like, okay. So, it was much better once I was left alone completely. But then I had a great midwife here. She pretty much told me off because I'd had so much gas and air. I was having a lovely time just not doing anything. And she was threatening me to like saying, I'm taking the gas and air away from you. I was like, don't you dare. But she eventually did take the gas and air away from me and said to me, look, this baby needs to come out. Either we do it here or I take you to hospital. And I was like, what? So yeah, I had a bit of a good talking to, which was what I needed at the time. But yeah, I was really lucky. Just had a graze with her, so I didn't have to have stitches or anything, which was wonderful. So I could get into bed just with my baby and get on with it, really, which was nice. It was really lovely.
Amazing, amazing. And obviously in your professional capacity, you see lots of this kind of stuff all the time, you know, second degree tears, episiotomy scars, that kind of scarring in that part of our body. What kind of effects do you see that having on people's physique and gait and are the common things that people need to look out for that they might not associate with that scar healing?
If you've had a first or second degree tear, it's not too bad. It depends also where it is, because if you think of your vulva and all the different areas, you can have tears that go down straight back towards your perineum, You can have them coming out to the side. You can have them coming up to the top. They can be just on your labia or they can be more internal. So it really does depend on the area of where it has been torn. Or if you've had an episiotomy, they often do it diagonally out to the side and backwards rather than straight back. But if they do the straight back, that can affect your perineum as well. But with tearing or episiotomies, inside you have your pelvic floor muscles. If those have been torn or cut, that will affect how that muscle functions. So, you know, if you had a really deep cut on your thigh and it cut through into your muscle, there's no way you'd be wanting to kick a football, because that you'd want that muscle to heal and that skin to heal and everything to heal, and you'd have to rehab for that recovery. Whereas we're expected as women, because we don't see it, we don't look at it, it's like, oh yes, your stitches have healed, you're absolutely fine, get on with it. But we don't think about the fact that those muscles inside won't work as effectively. So your pelvic floor muscles are really important to aid with your both your anal sphincter and your urethral sphincter. So they will help with your incontinence, but also just bringing back together the pubis from where it's been opened up during labour. So the vaginal canals will get a bit smaller, but also the main function of your pelvic floor is support of your pelvis. Your pelvis has been massively stretched during birth. Your pelvic floor has been massively stretched. It's also had this huge weight on it for a long period of time. And so the muscle becomes really knocked off. It's like if you strapped a big weight to your arm for a whole day and then was told, go and do some push-ups, you'd be like, I can't, my arm's too tired. If you think of the amount of time that the baby's sitting on those muscles and then the effect of labour of pushing, that can have a big effect on those muscles. So they have to be rehabbed carefully and effectively. The scarring can then cause the muscles to become a bit tighter as well sometimes. So it's really important with stitches, once they're healed, to massage them. So, and not ignore them, and just to get all of that tissue moving a little bit more as well.
That's really interesting. So when you say massage them, have you got some kind of techniques that people, can you just verbally describe how that massage might be? Is it quite firm? Is it quite soft?
So initially it will feel really, really weird. A lot of people with scarring, because it feels quite sensitive, but in quite a numb sensitive way, it's really easy to ignore scars. The more you ignore them, the more sensitive they get. So what you want to be doing is, as soon as they have healed up completely, going gently initially, because underneath the external part of the skin may have healed, but underneath may still not have healed properly. I wouldn't really start touching scars and things for like probably about 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. You can do gentle over the skin before that if it's healed up, but not going too deep after that, because you're waiting for things to heal a bit more. Then you can go in as deep as you want, but you want to be going over the area of the scar, but also above and below it and round the edges, so that you're trying to get that skin moving. So imagine if you put your finger on top of your skin on your arm and you move it up and down, you can feel the skin moving over the muscles and the tissue underneath. And that's what you want to be doing with the scar tissue, so that you're really trying to mobilize it as much as possible.
Would that be applicable to a C-section scar as well? Would that same technique work?
Absolutely. And C-section scars are probably even more important to work on. I know that lots and lots of ladies don't like looking at them and they don't like touching them, but they do become more and more sensitive. That sort of that overhang you can get with the C-section, like sometimes it's absolutely unavoidable, it's going to happen. But if you can get that scar moving, if you can get the tissues moving a little bit more, then you're less likely to sort of get that real divot in underneath. There are also lots of great soft tissue therapists out there that work on scarring as well, C-section scarring, things like that. So it's always worth trying to see someone if you're worried about that.
That's really interesting. Thank you.
So you mentioned before how when you became a mother, that's what's led you into specialising this work and your own journey of healing. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that came about and what your experience was? And as a physiotherapist, did you struggle with these changes in your body that perhaps you hadn't been aware of previously?
One of the things that I did that as a physio, I felt like I should have known, but not having specialised in women's health at the time, I did everything wrong. After my son, my husband and I decided to get married. And so I went on a full pelt, every exercise under the sun to get that wedding body. And I was doing a lot of high impact stuff, like cardio nonstop. And when I had my daughter, I was pregnant with my daughter, 20 weeks my back went. And I then suffered with back pain throughout the whole of her pregnancy and then afterwards. And it was because of the fact that I hadn't rehabbed properly. I'd gone into doing these really high impact exercises. I wasn't stable enough. My core wasn't working correctly. My pelvic floor wasn't working correctly. And because of possible previous injuries from when I was in the Alps and snowboarding and things like that, my disc had just gone completely. So then the extra weight of having being pregnant again and holding my daughter, it all just went to pot. So that's when I was like, what did I do wrong and what should I have done? I wanted to get myself better so that I could run around after my son and pick up my daughter and things like that. So it was that that sort of pushed me into going, right, what do I need to do to make myself better?
And what did you discover? What was kind of the first things that you needed to look at on that journey?
Massive one was pelvic floor. I had no idea how important the pelvic floor is. And, you know, I would still have a possible little leak if I had a full bladder and I laughed and coughed. But, you know, there's so much out there that's, oh, well, it's normal. It's normal. You've had kids. You've had two kids. It's absolutely fine. It's not normal. It's really common, but it's not normal and it can be treated. And one of the big things that I'm always trying to tell people is that if you have had any kind of, if you've had a vaginal delivery, you are at a much higher risk of having a prolapse or incontinence at menopause if you don't work on your pelvic floor now. And we should be working on our pelvic floor pre-pregnancy, but we don't think about that because you don't really have any problems before then. And then it's during pregnancy, after pregnancy, and then throughout the rest of your life, because these muscles are these inner muscles that are just keeping us all together and keeping everything nice and stable. So once I'd sort of worked out like pelvic floor, then that seemed to start to help, because then it engages your core a lot more and then you're able to keep everything nice and supported when you're then doing other exercises.
That's really interesting. So that kind of correlation about not doing the pelvic floor exercises, and then you were saying you're more likely to have a kind of prolapse injury when you get to menopause. What is it around menopause times that means that that's going to be triggered?
So when you are menopausal, perimenopausal, your estrogen levels start to drop, all your hormones start going a bit haywire. But when you're menopausal, you're not producing any estrogen anymore. The estrogen can decrease your muscle mass. So it's not just that, you know, if you didn't train for a couple of weeks that you decrease your muscle bulk, it actually decreases the muscle cells. So if you don't keep them really nice and strong and work on them continuously, it's very hard to regain them again. And it's harder to get them strong. So it's so important to just keep your muscles working. And that's throughout your body as well. When it comes to us ladies, we have to keep working on it. We have to work on strength exercises. We have to just keep our bodies as fit and strong as possible, because when that estrogen does drop, we have to have as good as possible to work with.
That makes total sense. So could I then interpret from that our, say, postnatal classes that we do with the mum and babies and the postnatal classes that mums come to when they can be a bit more hands-free, which is usually just for the first couple of years after having a baby, is what people think that's for them. Could we be quite clear in saying, well, actually, you could come to that class if you have a 10-year-old child or an 18-year-old child and still really, really benefit from the practices? Would that be a fair thing to say?
Absolutely, definitely. And it's even the new mum checks. So like, we advertise the new mum checks on the website, or I do women's health assessments. but I can still do a new mum check on someone who's got a 14-year-old or a 7-year-old or whatever, because if they've never been checked, they don't know whether they've still maybe got a bit of a split in their tummy muscles or whether their pelvic floor muscles are functioning correctly. What there tends to be as well is really common. We were talking before about episiotomies and scarring and things like that. Episiotomies tend to always be on the right side because that's the direction they come into when they're possibly doing an assisted delivery. So forceps ventouse, the obstetrician will come in from the right side. So they do the episiotomy on that side. That then tends to cause damage to the pelvic floor on the right side. That then in the future becomes weaker because the left side has not been damaged. The right side has been damaged. It tends to not bother. The left side compensates. Then after many, many years, there's this imbalance of compensation. And that's when people come to me saying, I'm not sure. I've got a bit of back pain. I've tried doing this. I've never really been checked. I'm not sure whether my pelvic floor is working properly. I've got a bit of incontinence and all this sort of thing. But it's also really common that women don't come and see me until their kids are at school. It's one of the biggest things, is that it's the one time that they're like, right, both the children are now in school, or however many children in school, I now have the time to think about all of these issues that I've been dealing with the whole time that, you know, I've been looking after them, and now I'll get myself sorted. So what I want to try and encourage people to do is come earlier and get it sorted quicker, because then you'll be in a much fitter state to look after your children and yourself and your family.
That makes so much sense, doesn't it? I'm always saying to the ladies that come to my classes, you know, if you can come from 6 or 8 weeks after you've had your babies and just use that first year or two to build those foundations back up, it's much better than leaving it till your kids are at school, like you're saying, and then thinking, it's feeling a bit funny down there. Maybe I should go and look at it and, you know, deal with it as quickly as you can, really.
I was really interested about what you said about the new mummy check and how that could be applicable. And you say better late than never. And I think that's a really good point to get across, that it is always worth having one, regardless of how long it's been. But someone coming to you, what would that involve? What would you do with them?
So I tend to do a really good subjective history of finding out how their birth was, what's going on with their bladder, what's going on with their bowel movements as well, because I work a lot with bowels, with ladies with bowel problems as well. And that can all come about in pregnancy, and it all comes about postnatally as well. You know, we all know about the pregnancy constipation, and then the first poo is, you know, the scariest thing ever. But that can then trigger off more constipation. And if there are problems with bladder and bowel, then we'll talk a lot about that in the session. Talk about how the birth went, how they're feeling now, whether they're actually able to look after themselves, whether they've got any support, that sort of thing. And then physically, I'll have a look at the way they're standing, how they're moving. I have a check of the tummy muscles in case there is any sort of gapping between the tummy muscles. And check their core to make sure that they can control that. I then do an internal check if they're happy for me to do an internal check. And I will have a look around the vulva, look around the labia, see if there is any scarring, where the episiotomy's been, or where their stitches are, and check everything is okay. I'll have a look externally to see what movement is there when you do pelvic floor exercises. And then I do an internal check with my finger. It doesn't go in very far at all. And I just hook over onto the side and get them to do pelvic floor exercises to see whether the pelvic floor is contracting well. And I'll check both sides. I also check for pelvic organ prolapse as well, because that's a massively common thing postnatally, because of all of that bearing down and pushing during labour. Some of the pelvic organs can drop a little bit, so I'll check for prolapse. But the good thing about that is, if you are checking for prolapse, you're checking for pelvic floor, the NICE guidelines state that if you have urinary incontinence, or you have grade 1 or grade 2 prolapse, so where it's all still enclosed inside the vaginal canal, that pelvic floor exercises will help that. So conservative management guided by a women's health physio can get that better. So it's sort of like a minimum of 4 months of doing it. And in that time, it's not just right coming in to see me and me getting you lying on the bed doing pelvic floor exercises. I then give lots of advice on where they're at. So if they can do their pelvic floor exercises in lying and they can feel it really strongly, I'll get them up in sitting and ask them if they can feel it as strongly in sitting and then standing. It's a real functional rehab process. So it's a lot to do with where they're at when they come and see me to what I give them to go away with. And that's the biggest thing about the assessment, is making sure, because I have some ladies who they come in, they need one check and I say, right, okay, you're doing fantastically. Go away, do loads of core exercises. If you want to run again, do a couch to 5K, bring yourself up slowly. I'll teach them how to do a squat properly with engagement of pelvic floor and breathing and things like that. And then they don't have to come back to see me unless they have any problems. Or I'll see someone who's got two prolapses, some incontinence, very minimal activity in their pelvic floor. And I'll be saying to them, just walk. Let's just do some pelvic floor exercises in lying to start with, doing a little bit of walking, doing a little bit of core stuff, and then we build it up from there. So it's really dependent on the findings.
Do you find that women come to see you for other reasons relating to other areas of their body that actually ultimately come back to perhaps how they birthed or how they recovered postnatally?
Yeah, I see lots of ladies who are probably coming up to perimenopausal stage with back pain. And that is when I talk to them about their back pain and they say, oh, you know, I've been running on and off, or I've been doing this. And then I ask them about, you know, their family life. And they're like, oh, yeah, I've got two kids. And I'm like, oh, and how was your birth? And, oh, well, it was a bit traumatic, or I had a C-section, or this, that, the other. And then I get this picture of, okay, did you rehab properly after you had your children? Unlikely. That's why your back pain is now really bad, because our bodies ultimately are really, really clever. They compensate for us so that we can carry on. They'll do anything so that we can keep going. So for years and years, your body can compensate, and then it will get to a point where an area is being massively overused. And so then it goes, right, I've had enough now, and causes pain. And that's when people then come to see me and it's like, okay, we need to go back a bit and we need to start working on the internal work and getting the core working a lot more and the glutes working a lot more, and treating the back pain from that side of things.
And with the back pain, is that kind of anywhere in the back that would track back to this kind of not having the opportunity to do the rehab work? Or is it kind of quite localized and specific and you're already thinking, I think this is going to be another one of these scenarios again?
So lots of low back pain and sacroiliac joint pain. So sort of one-sided, right in those dimples in your lower back. Buttock pain as well. So when you've got that deep piriformis, deeper glute pain, lots and lots of hip flexor strains and tension, because we massively overuse our hip flexors, because we're not using, so the fronts of your hips, so we're not using our bottom muscles properly. Women, for some reason, we just don't use our bottom muscles very well at all. So that's one of the things that we should be really always working on, because if you think of your bottom, it's a nice big area of muscle, and actually if we can get that working, it supports your whole spine and your pelvis. So lots and lots of bottom squeezes as well as pelvic floor, definitely.
There's so much you can do with a really effective squat as well. You know, finding that sweet spot where you really are switching the bum muscles on. Just coming into squats can tire you out very quickly if the bottom's not been used to working for a while. And, you know, we're very keen on, particularly with the rehab, connecting movement with breath and breathing in a way that is conducive to the muscles working responsively to the load, and ensuring that we don't start to bring in tension patterns. So when you were talking about compensating earlier, and our body wants to find the easiest way for us to carry on. And how do you use a lot of breath work in the work that you do?
Yeah, I do. I don't know whether it's the same with the yoga style of breath work, but I tend to teach the pelvic floor exercises So it's a breath in to relax and a breath out to draw the pelvic floor up and in to assist with the diaphragm and the tummy muscles. So then what I will do with, say, a squat is get them to breathe in as they go down, breathe out with the exertion. So what my thing is always exhale on exertion. So if you were, say, doing a push-up, you breathe in as you go down, you breathe out as you do that big push back up. But what I just wanted to say about squats is that they're a really easy exercise to get back to doing postnatally, but be really careful if you haven't been checked beforehand, because I have seen a number of ladies who've just gone back to their normal sort of exercise routine, have been doing lots of squats, and then they cause themselves a prolapse, and then they'll be like, oh, I've suddenly got this heaviness. They come and see me and they've just started doing those squats too soon before their pelvic floor has been able to keep everything nice and controlled and tight.
Yeah, really important. And it all makes absolute sense. You know, the breathing's exactly the same as what we would suggest as well. So it's great to get a physio perspective on that. That's really helpful.
Do you have recommendations around pelvic floor exercises? We know that Kegels often are given as the one-stop shop for this is how you fix your pelvic floor. And the more understanding we come to have is that actually that's not always the best treatment for everyone, and in fact a lot of people suffer the effects of a hypertonic pelvic floor, and that's quite common for a lot of women. Do you see a lot of women coming in with a hypertonic or tight pelvic floor, and why Kegels might not be the best approach for everyone?
Yeah, so for lots of people, just doing your pelvic floor exercises are really good. And what I would say is the NHS Squeezy app is a really good one. If you want a little bit of visual feedback, just to say, right, reminders, all of that sort of thing, it has a little dot that gets bigger and then closes again so that you're meant to squeeze with that dot. But lots of the machines that are available that you can use, like such as the LV and Kegel 8 machines and things like that, I would use them with caution. If you already have good pelvic floor, they can be really effective at getting you stronger because they give you feedback on how your pelvic floor is working. But what I tend to find is if your pelvic floor is already weak, if you use one of these machines, you're so desperately trying to get some feedback on, say, your phone, or so you can see what's happening, that actually you end up using your thigh muscles, your bottom muscles, your tummy muscles, and don't use your pelvic floor muscles correctly. So then the pelvic floor muscles get weaker and weaker because you're using these more external muscles just so that you can get something to jump up and down on your screen to see that activity. I also advise people that by the time you've faffed around getting the lube and putting the thing in and all of that, setting it all up, you could have actually done a set of pelvic floor exercises. They're really simple. The biggest thing is coming from anus to pubis. So you want to be really making sure that you contract from around the anal sphincter first. So you're stopping yourself passing wind to stopping yourself having a wee. And then trying to breathe gently as you hold it for 10 seconds. So I always try and teach a set of 10 lots of 10 seconds, 10 short on and offs, and then a 20 second hold at 50%. Lots of people can't do 10 lots of 10 second holds, and that's fine. But the more you practice it, the more you're able to do it. And we also don't want any breath holding. So it's an inhale to prepare, out an exhale to contract, and then trying to breathe gently. One of the problems with pelvic floor is that some people don't relax properly. So they end up in this sort of spasming state of pelvic floor. So the pelvic floor kicks in but doesn't relax. It then tries to kick in again, and it gets really, really tired. And that's when you get your hypertonic. It then doesn't work effectively, because if you imagine, say, your elbow, if you bend your elbow but you don't straighten it out properly and it's just in this continuously bent state, you can't then do anything with that arm. And that's what then your pelvic floor is doing. It's in this continuous tightened state, but then isn't contracting and relaxing properly. And that's when you can start getting urinary incontinence and problems there. So I do see lots of ladies with more hypertonic. It can also occur when you're stressed, when you're anxious. You know, one of our comforting positions is a fetal position. We like to curl up, and if we're in pain, so period pains, for example, when we've got menstrual pain, we tend to curl up. That's our nice position for us to feel comforted. But actually what we're doing is we're tightening everything up again. So because of that cramp, we're then cramping even more. And what we should be doing is actually extending and opening up as much as possible and stretching out as much as possible. So lots of the ladies that I see with hypertonic, I get them doing loads of extension work. So opening up, Happy Baby is a brilliant one, absolutely brilliant one for hypertonic pelvic floor. Some Cobra stuff if they've got tight abdominals, because with the tight pelvic floor, you'll end up getting really tight hip flexors, really tight abdominals. It's all of that sort of front of the body stuff that gets really tight. So it's, yeah, working on trying to get that pelvic floor to relax before you can then get it to contract again. And I also teach ladies to do internal massage themselves as well. And like, lots of people don't want to do it, which is fair enough. Lots of women don't want to see their own bits or touch their own bits, which I'm trying to change, because actually we should be much more aware of our bodies than we are. And I think that comes from us teaching our children to not be scared of our privates, as you know, as everyone calls them, but actually say, this is part of your body. This is okay. If it's sore, if it's red or anything, look at it, have a feel of it. What can we do about it? If it was your hand, you'd do something about it. So yeah, it often stems from like keeping those areas private and not wanting to know about them and slightly disassociating that area of your body from yourself, because it is your private parts.
What we say, how we frame it, you know, how we treat ourselves, how we talk about this with our children, it's going to make a big impact on when our little girls grow up and they go through all the same things we're all going through right now.
So Tina, what is your advice to women who have just had a baby about returning to sex?
I get asked this a lot, because lots of my women are absolutely petrified of having to have sex again, especially if they've had any tears or stitches or anything like that. So what I tend to say is it's up to them, and it's got to be very much led by them. Get loads of lube, for one, when they're ready, and then they have to be in control. It's going to feel weird the first time. Things will have felt like they've moved inside a little bit, and sometimes it can feel a bit sore or achy. So I always say to be in control, so that they can stop if they need to, slow things down if they need to. And if they're not comfortable, then stop completely and try again another time. One of the things about being fearful about having sex is that you tense up, and that makes things everything worse. So you've got to be in a nice, relaxed, you know, try as much as you can when you've got a baby, maybe next to you or next door, just to try and be as relaxed as possible and try to enjoy it as much as possible as well, because that will help. But it's very much on mum's terms.
That's really good advice.
I was just wondering, what you said about internal massage sounds like it could be a really effective tool for not only helping to heal your pelvic floor, but also, as you were saying, demystifying this area or making it feel a part of you as a whole, perhaps removing shame or awkwardness around that part of our body, and then taking that forward as we raise our children. What do you recommend? How do you suggest people do that?
It's quite specific. So I tend to teach people in clinic, but it's really quite simple, of just, you know, using your thumb and making sure you've got some good lube as well. I always recommend the Yes 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 lubes. I don't know if you've heard of them, the Yes company. They're the only, not the only, but I've been told that most over-the-counter lubricants are made for men and not women. So this is an organic one that is made specifically for women. They do a wide range of products, actually, like vaginal moisturizers and oil-based lubricants as well. But I always use that in my clinic, but always using some good lube with your thumb, and then just hooking onto sort of a diagonal back wall. I always sort of try and explain it as if you're sitting on a clock and 12 o'clock is in front of you, 6 o'clock is behind you, you're sort of hooking over 5 and 7 o'clock. And just gently, so you're not even massaging, you're gently just pressing down on areas. And if they feel tender, go gently. It's not like having your neck and shoulders massage where you're going, oh, I've got to get into those knots or anything. Imagine that you are just massaging something really delicate, because you don't want to then cause those muscles to get inflamed or angry with you. So you're just really, and with breath work as well. So lots and lots of breath work, lots of sort of vagal breathing, in for 3, out for 6, doing it on the exhalation, trying to stay as calm as possible. Like doing it in the bath is always a good one as well, because it's nice and warm and you're relaxed a little bit more. But that, you know, it's the same with the perineal massage as well. Someone was asking me the other day, she was saying, oh, it's really painful. I was like, don't make it painful. It doesn't need to be painful. You know, if you do it regularly enough and gently, it's fine. But just doing a little bit of soft tissue work is definitely better than nothing. So what I would do for someone who has really weak pelvic floor that's not actually contracting properly, then I would actually be a bit more vigorous with touching around the area, because you're trying to stimulate some activity in the muscle, you're trying to wake it up. But if they're not relaxing properly, that's when we'd do a lot more sort of myofascial internal release there. But I just wanted to go back to saying about our daughters and teaching them and things like that. But it's not just our daughters, it's our sons as well. And explaining to them that this is normal, and letting them see us naked and know what that looks like and know what that means. I know that, like at home, I've got a little like a hand mirror. So if my daughter ever says that she's feeling sore or anything like that, I'm like, right, have a look, see what's going on. And I think it's really important that we educate that, and they know that it's a vulva and which bits are what, and why it might be sore, and if they're not wiping properly and things like that.
And it's those kind of conversations that you can start off when they're really tiny, asking you all the best questions that they come out with when they're like 3 and 4. Just answer them. I used to go really scientific with my kids, and then they were like, okay, I'm bored now, Mum. But actually, the proper words in straight off the bat, and showing a kind of confidence and contentment with our bodies, rather than mystifying stuff that doesn't need to be mystified. What's with all that?
I was in a service station toilet with my daughter once, and she suddenly crouched down and went, "Mummy, let me see your vulva." And I was like, oh my God. Mortified. And I was like, "Not now." And she was like, "But why not, Mummy? Come on, let me see it. I want to see yours." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is..."
So my daughter, I didn't call it a vulva. I called it a vagina, even though I knew that was anatomically incorrect, because we drive a Volvo. And I didn't want there to be any confusion. But that might have been beneficial for you in that situation. It's parked outside. We'll get there in a minute.
I was mortified. I could hear another woman in the next cubicle like giggling, and I was just like, oh my gosh, not now.
Write a big sign somewhere and get a message out that you feel people should know. What would it be?
For women to look after their bodies, to look after themselves. I think we are the world's worst at looking after ourselves. We put ourselves at the bottom of the list. When we become mums, our children come first. And we don't look after ourselves at all. Often people can become burnt out, you end up injuring yourself, you have all sorts of different complaints that you just get through, you know, incontinence problems, all sorts. And I think it's just one of those things that I tell all my ladies, like a bit of self-care. You've always got to give yourself some time to look after yourself, because you will then be much better at looking after everyone else.
Fantastic. What do you do for self-care? Do you have a ritual or a routine?
I am terrible at self-care. My husband has to tell me to go and take time out, but I really like doing exercise when I get a chance. And the problem is always timing, isn't it? So motivation for exercise is lacking, but once I do the exercise, it really helps. So just having some time out to do some cardio or to do some strength work, do some yoga is my thing. I was doing meditation regularly, but as always, when life gets busy, you stop doing the thing that's the most important. And I know that, but yeah, I love doing meditations as well.
Lovely. Do you have an app that you use or anything for that you like?
I use Calm app at the moment. I sort of switch because I get a bit bored sometimes of different ones. So yeah, I'm using Calm at the moment.
And we like to ask all our guests to finish the statement, I'm a yoga teacher, but, and in your case, it's going to be, I'm a physiotherapist, but. Have you got any guilty physiotherapist confessions for us?
I would definitely say, do as I say, not as I do, because I don't stretch. I tell every single one of my patients it's so important that you stretch and that you keep your joints really supple and that your muscles are nice and long and strong. And I am the world's worst. And I only stretch when I'm in pain. And I know that I need to. And it's because of the fact that my muscles are really tight that I don't like doing it, because it's hard work. But I'm really, really bad at that. So yeah, definitely do as I say, not as I do. And I need to give myself a big slap on the back of the wrist every day for not doing it.
I'm a physiotherapist, but I don't stretch.
Yeah, it's really bad. Yep.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. Have you got a I'm a yoga teacher, but this week, Claire?
Mine are always alcohol related, which is not great. I'm a yoga teacher, but I went out and had an out night last night and meal, and we had cocktails at the beginning and bubbles and wine with every course. So I've actually got my first hangover in about a year, and I'm feeling really happy about it. It's like a really indulgent hangover. So I'm a yoga teacher, but I got a little bit drunk last night.
Mine this week is very yoga related. I'm a yoga teacher, but it still annoys me that I can't get my heels down in downward facing dog. and I know it's not about that. And I know that I should be content with my body as it is and not pass judgment on myself. But I'll be honest, there's just days where it really pisses me off. So, I'm a yoga teacher, but the fact that my heels don't go down in downward facing dog really still annoys me. The other question we like to ask Tina is, what are you grateful for in your life right now?
So I think with COVID happening, it was actually a bit of a blessing for me and my family. It made us stop. Before the first lockdown, I was probably at the point of, if I'd continued, of having some kind of breakdown, because I had the full mental load of running a business, sorting out the kids. My husband was commuting all the time, was never home to help with the kids, doing pickups or drop-offs or anything like that. So I was rushing everywhere. And it was only when the lockdown happened and we had to close the clinic and had to stop that it was like, oh, wow, this was too much. And actually, over this past year, we've had a real sort of rejig of everything. Mark's now working from home a lot more. He's doing half the week pickups and drop-offs. I'm doing the other half of the week pickups and drop-offs. He has to remember things like taking snacks to school to pick them up, and it's not just all on me all the time. And that has massively helped, like, mental health-wise. And just what I realised was just enjoying them again, like having that time to be with them, to go on long walks and to hang out as a family again, rather than just feeling like, right, I've just got to get you from school, I've got to get your dinner on, and just not really engaging with them or acknowledging them, because it was just like, I've just got to get the things done, and then I've got to finish work, and I've got to do this. So yeah, it's been really nice to have that, to go, right, this, I actually want to spend time with people, I want to know what's going on in your life a bit more and enjoy them. So yeah, really grateful for that.
Aww.
What are you grateful for this week, Claire?
What am I grateful for this week? Oh well, okay, so yesterday I decided to give myself a couple of hours off, so working on the self-care and working on the not rushing around all the time, you know, trying to work on that habit that I'm newly cultivating to carve out a bit of time for myself. I was very grateful that my friend had lent me the True Blood novel and I got into bed at about 2 p.m. and read it for an hour with a cup of tea and then had a little doze, and then the kids all came home from like 3:30, 4 o'clock and I got up and I was like, yay, I've just read some amazing trashy novel in bed in the afternoon. It was bliss. So I'm really grateful for having the space and the time and the mindset to go, no, I'm going to turn the laptop off, I'm going to just go and put my feet up for an hour. It was good.
Nice. Yeah, lovely.
I am grateful for my new purple Adidas Gazelles. They are just like, make me so joyous. Every time I put them on my feet, they're super comfortable and they are bright purple and they make me smile.
Nice.
So I'm a yoga teacher, but I love shoes. And and this week I am very grateful for them. Tina, we believe that each of our babies brings with them a gift, maybe a quality that we didn't have within us before, maybe sort of a personality trait or a new perspective. Do you agree? Do you think that either or both of your children bought you a gift?
I would say that definitely having my children has made me more patient, because I have to be, and much less selfish. I think when you don't have children, you can be selfish because it is all about you and what you want to do. And when you have children, it's all about them. So you do become a lot less selfish. I think one of the things with the patient side is knowing that is being able to stop. I'm a terrible person for rushing around. I rush about everywhere. And my children have made me have to stop a little bit, because, you know, I can't rush them to tell me a story of something that can go on for 10 minutes and, you know, it really isn't that important, but it is to them. And that's something that I've had to, they've definitely allowed me to have to stop a lot more. And plus they're cuddles. I just, you know, you can't stop cuddles. And if they stop you and ask you and say, well, I want to cuddle mummy, then you do, you drop everything, don't you? And it's absolutely, yeah, I can't rush about when they're with me as much, which is nice.
Thank you so much, Tina, for joining us today. It has been absolutely fascinating hearing all about your work, and I've certainly learned some things and will be trying some things out as well. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been really lovely to chat to you, ladies.
I just want to chuck in that whilst you were talking about all the pelvic floor stuff, my subconscious brain was there turning my pelvic floor on and off. I want to know how many ladies at home are like raising their eyebrows and squeezing and releasing as you were talking. It was just like, oh my God, stop doing it.
I know, it's funny, isn't it? Because you sort of see people's eyes suddenly go off and to the side. You're like, oh, they're doing their pelvic floor.